Unit 4. Gateway to Life Skills. Critical Thinking. Does chocolate make you clever?
If you've ever worried about eating too much chocolate, good news is at hand. According to recent research, chocolate may actually make you more intelligent. A cardiologist at Columbia University, Franz Messerli, decided to look into the possibility of a link between chocolate and intelligence after he had read studies stating that cocoa was beneficial for health. One study had found a connection between the consumption of cocoa and improved mental function in elderly patients. Another found that animals such as rats and even snails live longer and have better cognitive function when they eat chocolate. Messerli decided to test his theory by comparing the number of Nobel Prize winners in a country in proportion to the population of that country with the nation's chocolate consumption. And the results of his study were significant. When the two factors were compared, chocolate consumption and the number of Nobel Prize winners, there was a very strong correlation. Switzerland, which has the highest consumption of chocolate per capita, has also produced the highest number of Nobel laureates. Meanwhile, China appeared at the bottom of the table in both chocolate consumption and the number of prize winners. The evidence suggests a clear relationship between chocolate and intelligence. The correlation found has a p-value of 0.0001, which means there is a less than 1 in 10,000 chance of getting results like these if there is no relationship between the two. Sweden does not fit the pattern, producing a large number of Nobel laureates while eating much less chocolate. However, Messerli explains this anomaly by pointing out that Sweden is responsible for donating and evaluating the prize, so it's possible that there is a national bias. Another theory is that Swedes may have a higher sensitivity to cocoa, and a lower level of consumption would therefore be needed to produce the same effect on their intelligence. Though it hasn't yet been proven that it is chocolate that causes the increased intelligence, it is clear from other research that chocolate, and especially dark chocolate, can be very beneficial for your health, particularly for the brain and the heart. It is known to have a high level of antioxidants, which can lower cholesterol levels and improve blood pressure. And other studies have shown that eating chocolate can reduce the chances of stroke. So perhaps we should all eat more chocolate.
Unit 4. Gateway to Life Skills. Exercises 4 and 5. Unit 4. Listening. Exercise 2.
And now, a story that seems lifted from science fiction. Researchers are trying to bring back to life species that have become extinct. Some scientists believe it's a way to correct past mistakes and even help endangered species. But just because they might be able to do this, are they crossing a line that they shouldn't? With us in the studio, we have Professor Rogers from the University of California. Professor, the cloned dinosaurs of the Jurassic Park movies captured viewers' imaginations. But 65 million years after their extinction, what are the chances that scientists can bring them back?
Well, much as I'd love to see dinosaurs on the planet again, I'm afraid Jurassic Park is a fantasy and always will be. Dinosaurs are way too old to recover their genetic material. The older the fossils are, the more difficult it becomes to get organic samples. And without organic samples, you can't do much. The real problem is that the longer you go back, the more chance there is of the temperature going up and down. If a dinosaur had been frozen quickly and had stayed permanently at that temperature, then you'd have DNA samples. But that wasn't the case. That's why scientists are tending to focus on species that have become extinct more recently, because their DNA still exists.
Like the mountain goat, for example.
That's right. Researchers have already revived the last of the mountain goat, in Spain, in 2003, in fact. Unfortunately, she only lived a few minutes, but it's a sign of what can be done.
Okay, now I've heard a lot of talk about the giant woolly mammoth. Tell us about that.
Well, scientists at Harvard Medical School are engineering elephant cells that have thicker hair and a fatty layer to make them look more like woolly mammoths.
Leaving aside for the moment the fact that elephants themselves are endangered, why the interest in the woolly mammoth?
Well, the hope is that they could help us to stop the Arctic from melting. You see, the woolly mammoth may have played an important role in maintaining the grass there. Herbivores, like the woolly mammoth, probably grazed on the grass that grew on top of the permafrost, that's frozen soil or rock, and protected it from the sun. This grass stabilized the ice, which contains more carbon, that is, global warming carbon, than all the rainforests put together twice over.
How exactly is the engineering being done?
Well, they're using a new tool that allows them to insert genes into the elephant genome. Others are already using the same technology to bring back other species, like the passenger pigeon, which used to be one of the most common birds in the world until it died out at the beginning of the last century, mostly due to hunting. Work is going on to insert genes from museum specimens into its closest relative, the band-tailed pigeon. And if successful, these pigeons could help to restore forests on the East Coast by spreading seeds around.
Just to raise a point there, isn't it fair to say that if we hadn't caused destruction in these areas in the first place, we wouldn't need to recreate species now?
True. But the fact is that this work means we can go back and correct the mistakes of the past. Humans are the reason why species are going extinct at such a high rate. Populations are growing so big that we're having a huge impact on the environment, destroying habitats or converting habitat from its natural form into land for agriculture or cities. If you've got some ecosystem that we know is collapsing because we've lost some key ecosystem component and we can de-extinct it, I think we have a moral obligation to do that.
I guess a question we need to ask ourselves is, if you create a woolly mammoth or a passenger pigeon using, let's say, an elephant or another pigeon, is it really a mammoth or a passenger pigeon or some other kind of species?
Well, this technology is all very young. I think we're going to have to wait and see.
One more thing then, Professor. I know some people believe we should focus our resources more on saving species rather than de-extinction. I mean, if we did more to protect endangered species, many of these animals wouldn't have become extinct. What do you say to that?
I agree it's a matter of priorities, but I believe if we have these technologies, then we should use them in any way we can.
Okay, well, I'm afraid that's all we have time for. Thanks for speaking to us, Professor Rogers.
Thank you.
Unit 4. Developing Speaking. Exercise 5. Speaker 1.
This shows that roughly two-thirds of young people are interested in jobs and engineering, and a little more are interested in science. The interesting thing, in my opinion, is that more girls are attracted to a career in science than boys. 79% of girls think that a job in science would be interesting. In comparison, only 61% of boys said they would choose it as a career. Personally, I'm not too surprised that more boys are attracted to engineering because it's traditionally a masculine profession. But I think it's positive to see that such a high number of girls are entering the field of science.
Speaker 2.
You can see from this graph that the number of people who have a positive opinion of scientists rose steadily between 2005 and 2014. Actually, when you look closely, the number of people who think that scientists make a valuable contribution to society grew quite sharply between these years, because the percentage increased from 26% to 46% in just 6 years. I suppose that this reflects the fact that science is so important nowadays because of the need to find solutions to problems such as global warming, and also because things like genetic engineering in animals and plants are becoming more widespread. It seems that people are a bit more unsure when it comes to scientists' intentions, though. I find that a bit worrying because it means that people think scientists aren't always motivated by a desire to improve people's lives.
Speaker 3.
In this chart, you can see that the majority of young people think that the maths and science they learn at school are useful in their daily lives. However, a considerable number of people don't think it's useful, nearly a quarter, in fact. There was 1% that was undecided or didn't want to answer. I reckon that this shows that a significant number of young people don't value the maths and science that they learn at school enough, or that they don't see the relevance of it. Perhaps it means that the way that these subjects are taught in schools needs to be focused more on the way they can be used in everyday life.
Speaker 4.
The table shows that most people of all ages get information about science from TV. The biggest difference is that young people use online newspapers and websites much more, 24% compared to 15% of older people. They get a lot of information from social media too. In comparison, only 6% of older people use social media to find out about science. I'm not really surprised by this difference, given that young people generally spend more time using the internet. The table shows that young people read more in books too, but perhaps that's because they learn about science from school books. What I find interesting is that quite a high percentage of young people learn about science from the radio. I didn't think that so many people listen to the radio nowadays, and in particular not to programmes about science.
Unit 4. Reading. Modifying mosquitoes.
Genetically modified mosquitoes could help to eradicate malaria. Mosquitoes have been genetically modified so they only give birth to males in a new technique that scientists hope could help to wipe out malaria. Scientists from Imperial College London have tested a new genetic method that changes the ratio of male to female Anopheles gambiae mosquitoes, the main transmitters of the malaria parasite, so that the female mosquitoes, which bite and pass the disease to humans, are no longer produced. Female mosquitoes use human blood to acquire the nutrients they need to create eggs. A female mosquito can lay about 200 eggs at a time and up to 3,000 eggs during her lifetime. About half of the offspring will be daughters, many of which will live long enough to produce the same number of offspring themselves. For people living in tropical and subtropical areas, these females present a very real threat. In order to eliminate the female mosquitoes, scientists created a DNA cutting enzyme called IPPoI, which they inserted into a sample of Anopheles gambiae mosquitoes. In normal reproduction, the ratio of the X chromosome, which produces female offspring, and the Y chromosome, which produces males, is roughly equal. The enzyme used by the researchers cut the DNA of the X chromosome so that almost none could be produced. As a result, the offspring of the genetically modified mosquitoes was almost exclusively male. These genetically modified mosquitoes were then put into 5 cages containing general mosquito populations. In 4 of the 5 cages, the entire population was eliminated within 6 generations. The scientists hope that if they do the same thing with mosquitoes in the wild, the malaria-carrying mosquito population will ultimately die out within a few generations. Dr. Nikolai Windbichler, a lead researcher from the Department of Life Sciences at Imperial College London, said, What is most promising about our results is that they are self-sustaining. Once modified mosquitoes are introduced, males will start to produce mainly sons, and their sons will do the same. So essentially, the mosquitoes carry out the work for us. This is the first time that scientists have been able to manipulate the ratios of male and female mosquito populations. The researchers believe the work paves the way for a pioneering approach to controlling malaria, which continues to threaten the lives of half of the global population. As research professor Andrea Crisanti from Imperial College London said, "Malaria is debilitating and often fatal, and we need to find new ways of tackling it. We think our innovative approach is a huge step forward." According to the latest estimates by the World Health Organization, over 3.4 billion people are at risk of contracting the disease, and an estimated 627,000 die each year. Children under the age of 5 are particularly vulnerable, with one child dying every 60 seconds. What's more, sub-Saharan Africa loses about $12 billion in economic productivity due to malaria infections. Eradicating the disease would have real implications for the quality of life of people in those areas. Doctors and hospitals would be able to address other health concerns, and the environment would benefit from not having to use insecticides. Increased prevention and control measures in recent years have reduced global mortality rates by 42%. But the disease persists, especially in high-risk regions of sub-Saharan Africa. Mosquitoes have become increasingly resistant to insecticides, and the malaria parasite has become resistant to drugs. During the 1950s and 1960s, the Global Malaria Eradication Programme, GMEP, was successful in eliminating the disease from several parts of the world. If their efforts had continued, they would have been able to eradicate malaria completely, but a lack of funds halted progress. It's likely that mosquito populations would rebound after a few years, so the genetically engineered mosquitoes would need to be reintroduced into the wild regularly in order to control them. Nevertheless, scientists are hopeful that the approach could be used to fight all types of mosquito, including the species that transmit dengue fever, which is prevalent in over 100 countries. Concerns have been raised about the possible effect of eliminating mosquitoes on local ecosystems. After all, mosquitoes have been on the planet for about 100 million years, and they represent 3,500 species worldwide. Would we miss them if they disappeared? According to Britain's Pirbright Institute, mosquitoes are not a keystone species in their ecosystems. While mosquitoes can act as pollinators, as well as a food source for other animals, their absence would only be a temporary setback until another species filled the niche. The question remains, however, whether humans have the right to eliminate entire species in this way. Eradicating mosquitoes may have positive benefits in reducing disease levels, but only time will tell if this experiment will have any lasting effects on humankind.